Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game. And one of us is already rustling the papers of research. That's the sound of a spreadsheet, everybody. He normally saves that for the special Patreon part. That was the sound of a spreadsheet, everybody. Kieran's gone early with the spreadsheet. He licks his fingers and does it very quietly. But this is the show that looks at the money behind.
What about the spreadsheet?
We have broken a record. We haven't even said the name of the show yet, and BAFTA's already gone. The show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Now, Kieran, I think I can guess which part of the spreadsheet you're thumbing so eagerly, because after just over 6 months, it was the six-month anniversary, I believe, last week, although, as we discussed, Moonpig didn't do a card for a football club in administration that long, but it looks like, Kieran, good news for Derby fans. American multimillionaire Chris Kirchner has been named the preferred bidder for Derby County. Two questions, Kieran. What is the legal status, if any, of a preferred bidder? And are you surprised at the outcome and that Chris Kirchner is the choice?
There is no legal status. What's happened is that Quantamar, who are the administrators, they've been saying for a long period of time the preferred bidder will be announced soon. And it became a bit of a running joke, except nobody's laughing really, because because people's jobs are on the line and creditors are not being paid and so on. What it means is that they are effectively giving one of the, I think there were three confirmed interested parties. They are saying one of these parties now has exclusive rights to negotiate, exclusive rights to investigate the finances of Derby County Football Club, to talk to other important parties such as Mel Morris, CBE, ambassador for Derby for business. The man who put Derby County into administration, the man who kept the stadium for himself. So that can now make some progress. It is, I think, a surprise to a lot of people. And the reason for that is that Chris Kirchner originally, before Christmas, did throw his hat into the ring via social media. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, people work in a variety of ways these days. Then around in December, I think it was, he said he was withdrawing his interest. Mm. He couldn't make he felt he'd put forward a good deal, and that the Quantamar were not being reasonable. Quantamar said, well, it wasn't a good deal, so therefore, tutty bye. And then the next thing we hear is that Chris Kirchner is in talks with Preston North End. You know, we've spoken about the sad passing away of Trevor Hemmings last year and what was going to happen to Preston on the back of that. Well, it looks as if he has been having discussions with the club. And then that all collapsed, I think it was as recently as the 31st of March. Now, we're recording this on the 6th of April. So, a week ago, the noises were that Chris Kirchner was planning to buy Preston North End. My understanding is that he pulled out because there was a disagreement in respect of around about £2.5 million with regards to some money owed in respect of transfers. And also somebody at Preston had been rude to him, which is no need for that. No need for that, even in negotiations. Yeah, we don't know whether that's true or not. But all I can say is that sources close to Preston, and I'll go no further than that, said they didn't feel he had the money. They were concerned that he didn't have the money. And then I was at the Amex Stadium on Monday night watching our under 23s, ironically, play Derby County.
Did they score? We scored
four goals from open play.
Crikey.
Which is more than the first team have managed all season at the Amex.
If you're at the game on Saturday, you could have still been there Monday night and they wouldn't have scored. And that's against Norwich. Yeah.
I was talking to some Derby fans there, and over the course of the last, it was 6 months at least, I've got to know some Derby fans,
yes,
and they're
and some staff as well.
But yeah, and they're all pretty damn fantastic. Anybody that's going from the East Midlands to the South Coast to watch an under 23 game, you've got to doff any caps that you're wearing.
Yeah.
And these are people who I've got a degree of faith in. Again, on social media, some people lead from an emotional point of view, some people lead from a factual. So, the vibes were that Chris Kirchner was back and a deal announcement was imminent. And indeed, that deal announcement has come through on the Wednesday morning. It's an interesting place. Is it a guarantee that he's going to buy the club? No. I would point people in the direction of Wigan Athletic and the administration there, where the administrators had said, yes, we've got a preferred bidder from a Spanish consortium, and then it all went wrong. So it's no guarantee. The looming presence of Mike Ashley has not gone away. It sounds as if he's sort of in a resting, not dead type of position, where in the case of Derby County. I think the big issue, as far as Mike Ashley is concerned, if rumours, and yeah, we like a rumour, is that Mel Morris was not very keen on Mike Ashley to get his hands on Derby County. And given that Mel Morris still owns the stadium, he's actually in a position to be friendly or awkward in respect of any bidders, because the one thing that Quantamar, the administrators, cannot do is to is to sell the stadium, because it's not in administration itself. So we're not quite sure what's happening with Mike Ashley. There's another story going around that he's interested in another club in the EFL, but not in England. So we have to wait to see what happens there.
I presume, Kieran, Mike Ashley could buy or sell Mel Morris and Chris Kirchner, could he? I mean, surely he's far more likely, just in terms of pure wealth. And off the back of that, this is your world. Are there a specific set of criteria that Quantamar would have been using to come up with the preferred bidder, or is it simply that they're talking to people and their instinct is that Chris Kirchner is a decent choice and is serious about the club, so let's show him the books and see what he's getting?
Well, they have had months to build up a relationship. It did seem strange that there was a bit of a standoff before Christmas, but it's all sweetness and light. And ultimately, business is business. Presumably, he has showed them bank statements which give an indication that he has the resources to carry through with the bid. Now, there's another elephant in the room, is that if his bid before Christmas was not acceptable, I think there's a fair chance that, given in December when he last withdrew, Derby, they weren't in a great position in the table, but we've now got eight or nine matches remaining. They're 8 points adrift. The probability of going into League One is enhanced. Yeah. I can't see his bid going up. And there's an outstanding issue with regards to the EFL's insolvency rules, which say, and this is to protect creditors. This is to protect those local suppliers who have supplied Mel Morris's Derby County in good faith before the club went into administration. If, as a result of the administration, they don't get 25% at least of what they are owed, then there will be a further 15-point penalty. Looking at the small print, it would appear, and that's not the same as it's guarantee. Remember, I'm not a lawyer. We are both pub lawyers. Mm. It would appear that that penalty is most likely to be applied next season. So not only will Derby County have been docked 21 points in 21-22, it looks as if they could be minus 15 points in 22-23, irrespective of the division in which they find themselves.
And there's another issue for the EFL, which is going to have them on the back foot right from the start when it comes to fit and proper persons tests or whatever they want to call them these days. It's the nature of modern media that they've found some historical tweets from the new potential owner of Derby that are not pleasant in terms of his attitude to the LGBTQ community. So that's going to be an issue for the EFL. And also another issue to whoever takes over the club is that Quantumar's fees and expenses are estimated, I'm not sure by who, but estimated to reach £3 million.
Yes. So if we take those issues in turn, if we take a look at the EFL owners and directors test, it is very much focused on, do you have an outstanding conviction? Now,
right, okay.
Chris Kirchner has said, I've said some stupid things when I was younger. And a part of me thinks, well, I've said some really stupid things when I was younger. And you know, my views today don't reflect my views or the level of stupidity that I had when I was 18. Now, some people might say that stupidity still is there, but you know, I think we all grow older. So, if you say something dumb and you realize upon reflection that it was dumb, then A, have the cojones to say, you know, I'm apologizing. It doesn't reflect me today. And also, as far as other people are concerned, they should say, okay, you know, you cannot, you know, the first person who is perfect to is the only person who is in a position to actually take a real judgment on this.
I couldn't agree more, Kieran, but nevertheless, I've said some spectacularly stupid things and done some, I've said them on this pod, let's be fair, and certainly when I was young, and they're a matter of record, I've done shows about them. But nevertheless, as far as the EFL is concerned, it does add to the awkwardness of the situation because these are things that will be, you know, the media who have shown no interest whatsoever in the plight of Derby County will show a lot of interest in this because that's how the press works, unfortunately.
It is, but the EFL can only prevent Chris Kirchner from passing the owners and directors test if A, he has unspent convictions, and B, he's unable to provide proof of funding. Now, other issues, you know, should we have a beefed up owners and directors test is something we'll come to in a few minutes. So that's where we are with regards to him. Could somebody else come in? Could this be a ploy by Quantumar to try to flush out Mike Ashley or the third bidder? We don't know. Has Derby County turned a corner? I think it has. Has it turned the corner? We can't say at this stage. It's a step in the direction. It's not the same as getting over the finish line.
Well, that's interesting, because I spoke to a journalist not long ago on a Crystal Palace pod. I won't name him. He's normally reliable, and we talked about this off air, and he was speculating whether this might be a Jerry Lim situation. Something we mentioned on the live pod recently, where it seemed that Jerry Lim and Simon Jordan were in competition to buy Crystal Palace at one stage, and Jerry Lim bought it, and then Simon Jordan bought it from him the day after. And this journalist was speculating that it might be a similar sort of case. But also the £3 million, Kieran, that seems to be a lot of money in terms of fees. Again, I don't know who's estimated that Quantumar's fees are £3 million, But that is a lot of money, Kieran, for the job they're doing.
It is a lot of money. They're charging an average, around about £400 an hour. The clock's been running for 6 months. I think that £3 million includes their legal bills as well.
Right, okay.
If we take a look at what happened at Wigan, we're pretty close to it. And the Wigan job was a quicker job.
Yeah.
So, I used to do this line of work myself, as you know, before I decided to jack it in and become a teacher. And a part of the reason why I jacked it in to become a teacher, because it's not a very pleasant job, and sometimes unpleasant jobs come with big pay packets.
Yeah. The good news is, hopefully, though, Kieran, this could be a positive step in the right direction for Derby fans, and it's been a while since we've been able to say that, so let's keep our fingers crossed and move on to some other news stories. The first one's quite a big one in the context of an industry we've talked about a lot recently. And that is that gambling and betting companies will be banned from using advertising that features top flight footballers.
Yes, this is being introduced effectively by the broadcasting industries themselves, by some of the watchdogs involved there. It's not just footballers; it's influencers. It's the use of celebrity, and I think the concern here is that by associating gambling with success. So, we've seen Jose Mourinho, we've seen Peter Crouch, we've seen other people involved in football doing these types of adverts. They're very personable people. If they're seen to endorse gambling, it's the equivalent of celebrity endorsements for cigarettes, 30 or 40 years ago. So that appears to be one step that is being taken as part of a much broader investigation into where do we go as far as gambling is concerned. So if you're Peter Crouch's agent, if you're Jose Mourinho's agent, it's not good news, but the chances are they'll be probably advertising cryptos and non-fungible tokens and things which are similar. So it's certainly from the point of view, and I've been talking to people we know in who've had gambling issues. James Grimes, who was on the show last year from The Big Step, he yesterday was celebrating 4 years having not placed a bet.
Yeah,
and that is, first of all, well done, James, hell of an achievement. But also the fact that people are keeping a record of how long since their last bet, and there is so much temptation out there.
Yeah.
And I think this is the much bigger issue in terms of advertising for the industry. It is an addictive product. It is a habit-forming product. It is a product that potentially can destroy lives. And as such, there is a case for saying it should be monitored and it should be marketed in a more responsible manner.
The culture secretary, Nadine Dorries, and I still can't get used to saying those words, but nevertheless, the culture secretary, Nadine Dorries, says English football will have an independent regulator with a beefed up suitability test for owners and directors before the next general election, all of which I would take a little bit more seriously were it not for the fact that she didn't know until this week that Channel 4 was publicly owned. Something you'd like to think the culture secretary would be across, but nevertheless, as she announced plans to sell it, she had no idea that she was selling something that technically she owns. But there you go. But this can only be good news, Kieran, and it's something you've certainly argued with for, and the other woman in your life, Tracy Crouch, as well. I'm sure the Baroness was highly delighted when you said, "Tracy's done it. She's done it." But yes, as you suggested earlier, beefed up suitability test for owners and directors, which is, I think, 99% of football fans would be delighted to hear that.
It is, but if Nadine Dorries had suggested a diluted owners and directors test, it was only one thing that she could say.
Fair point, yeah.
I think that this is positive. It would appear that the culture secretary, clearly, we've got a good relationship with Tracy Crouch and friends at the DCMS. Is this going to go in the next Queen's speech? I think that's uncertain. Yeah, the next election. So it could be another cycle of this. And the independent regulator is my personal view, it's better than self-regulation, because self-regulation is driven by self-interest.
Yeah.
We've got to say, well, who appoints the independent regulator? Because we've just had somebody who's just been appointed to Ofcom, and there's been accusations of political appointments being made. You've got to define independent. You've then got to go and set out the criteria and the format of the work and the powers that this person will have. Otherwise, they could potentially just be the equivalent of a constitutional monarch. Just be rubber stamping decisions which are made elsewhere within the football industry. In terms of the response to it, the EFL are in favour of an independent regulator, as is the Football Supporters Association, as you would expect. The FA are saying it's not needed. The FA is saying, no, what should happen? And if you think about it, we presently have a tripartite arrangement at present. The Football Association, the Premier League, and the EFL are all independent. And the FA is now saying what they need is more power. So instead of having an independent regulator, transfer more power to the FA, and they will act in the best interests of football. So remember, this is the organisation which still thinks it's a good idea to have Liverpool and Manchester City playing in the FA Cup semi-final at Wembley on a weekend when there's no trains. I'm not convinced about this. This is also the organisation that thought it was a good idea to have the National Stadium stay at Wembley, which isn't a great venue. For a variety of reasons, London is not the epicentre of the country, certainly from a geographical point of view. So I think there are question marks over the Football Association. With regards to the Premier League, if there's going to be another 12 months before this goes into the Queen's Speech, this allows the Premier League a further 12 months for lobbying. And what have we seen from the Premier League to date? It's deny, deflect, and discredit the contents of the fan-led review. And also, it's when you've got those football matches where you've got a really good player and the opposition take it in turns to kick lumps out of him so they avoid getting a yellow card.
Yeah.
Well, it's very clear that this is the modus operandi of the Premier League, where one chief executive will come up with a few negative comments, then it will be another chief executive and so on. And there's no comments coming from the big six clubs because, of course, their reputation has been discredited by the way that they leapt so enthusiastically into bed with Super League. So it's clearly a policy. We know that there are lawyers trying to pick holes that have been appointed by the Premier League. We know that there are public relations agencies who are, again, drip negative stories about these proposals, and we will have to see. But it does appear, regardless of individual politics, where we stand on things, it's the Prime Minister's in favour of it, the Culture Secretary's in favour of it, and the person that wrote the report is in favour of it, and they are all from the party in government.
Brighton and Watford, that's all I'll say. Two teams who take turns to kick Wilf off the pitch while referees stand by applauding them for doing it. If you hear a strange drumming noise in the background, everybody, it's because out of nowhere, a huge thunderstorm has developed.
Oh,
with some rather impressive flashes of lightning. I'm just looking. The cat's got a slightly alarmed look on her face. I'm in the workroom out at the back of the garden, and she's in the kitchen looking out. I'm trying to send vibes to her. She's obviously worried about Daddy, but it's fine. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload, and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
The Ricketts family are one of the people who are trying to buy Chelsea Football Club, and they released a statement this week with an 8-point plan to try and reassure fans that they will be responsible owners, and that includes an absolute 100% copper bottom guarantee that Chelsea will never play in the Super League.
Yes, and sort of, yeah, we've just been talking about Chris Kirchner with regards to some historic comments that he's made. Well, one of the members, the patriarch of the Ricketts family, I think it's fair to say that his views and these emails he sent out were 3 years ago. I don't think we can say, well, yeah, when I was 78, I was too young I was still young and impressionable. So I know Paul Canneville, who has a position at Chelsea, who has suffered terrible abuse historically. We all know, you know, his backstory in terms of some stakeholders at Chelsea who have not behaved in a particularly appropriate manner.
Yeah.
But there's this 8-point plan, which does look like a classic appeasement, but never join the Super League, I think is the standout one. They are committed to staying at Stamford Bridge as opposed to moving to a new stadium. So whether it's going to be new development, I think not changing the shirt colour. Well, I don't think that's a big commitment, to be honest with you. They say we're going to have the resources to win trophies. Well, that's cool. Paying people wages. So again, you take some of these with a large dose of salt. They're committed to diversity inclusion. That's great. There's going to be an advisory committee which involves former players, which is great. Commitment to the women's team, again, great. Commitment to the Chelsea Foundation, which does superb work, again, great. But I think some of these would have been given. So it's a soft soap. It is public relations. I think the major takeaways, as you highlighted, Kevin, was that definitely not going to join the Super League, which I think the English clubs had effectively committed themselves to anyway.
Yeah, interestingly, they didn't actually say they wouldn't change the shirt or the badge. They said they wouldn't do it without consulting Chelsea fans.
Right,
okay. Which is a slightly different thing. This is a very childish reason. I have to be very careful. The mere name, Ricketts, mates, the idea of the Ricketts family taking over Chelsea is difficult for me, Kieran, and I have to be careful because I know he's listening, but I've got a very dear friend who's called Dave Ricketts, and Dave's from Gloucester, and he has what I can only describe as a sitcom Gloucester accent, and he's got a habit of blinking at you very slowly when you ask him a simple question, and he gets really angry if anyone ever criticises badgers. So what? Really angry. He once turned a table over in a pub because he said I was a Cockney wide boy who had no right to be suggesting that badgers might cause tuberculosis. He really actually turned a table over in a pub because of it. So every time people say that the Ricketts family are taking over Chelsea, I just have this image of my slow blinking badger angry mate. You know, I've bought Chelsea and everything will be fine as long as no one – I know it's a terrible accent – as long as no one takes a piss out. If Lukaku so much as mentions badgers, it's going to kick off. That's all I'm saying. At the other end of the financial scale, Kieran, apologies to everybody from Gloucester or Norwich or wherever that accent was meant to be. classic Londoner attempting to speak the way that other people apparently do speak wrongly. Crawley Town have confirmed for the first time that they are in talks about a potential takeover. It's Crawley Town being roughly halfway between where you are and where I am.
Yes, but perhaps we should set up a football club in Crawley one day, Kevin, and see how far we can get with it.
That's a good idea. Maybe, yeah, it's a very interesting idea. Yeah, people will discover the context for that statement in a few weeks' time, basically. But in the meantime, Crawley Town, which is a club I've been. I went to see Whitehawk when my cousin was playing for Whitehawk. I went to see them play at Crawley. We had a lovely night out, I have to say. But yeah, so do we know who is talking about potentially taking them over?
Well, at present, I think there are American American investors, and it's very vague. It's owned by a Turkish guy at present. I think there's always been a problem for Crawley Town in terms of it's got a natural ceiling in terms of its fan base, and yeah, and getting, you know, because the train links from Three Bridges and Gatwick are so good. Yeah, there's lots of fans that will go. I mean, there's lots of Crawley fans who support, people in Crawley who support Palace and Brighton, well, Palace or Brighton, should we say,
yeah,
as well as other London clubs. The present owner, the Turkish owner, he has funded the club, he's funded the losses, and now I think he's reached that stage where he's thinking, why am I sticking a couple of million quid into a football club, yeah, every year? I'm not getting a lot of love off the back of it, and you know, it's a sizable sum of money. So yeah, the club's in search of new owners. It has to be said, I could honestly name 20 or 30 clubs that I'm aware of who are in a broadly similar position, except they've not explicitly gone out to the local newspapers and said, yeah, come and get us. But when you talk to agents, when you talk to people involved in the game, it's fairly clear that there are many owners who either don't want to or have sort of fallen out of love with the game and will be quite happily to pass on their clubs to other owners. Mm. And the reason for that is it's an expensive hobby.
Yes. Speaking of which, Wrexham, Harrogate Town and Chesterfield all made a loss of more than £1 million in season 2021. I presume, Kieran, in Wrexham's case, that's before the Ryan Reynolds money kicked in, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, the Ryan Reynolds money sort of kicked in halfway through. Wrexham lost a lot of money. They lost multi-millions. Harrogate had their first season in the EFL with all of the additional money that comes from solidarity payments in the EFL TV deal, but they still had record losses of $1.1 million because it's the Alan Sugar prune juice effect comment. The more money that comes in, the more money you end up paying on wages. We also have to take into consideration, of course, that there are COVID implications. Although the majority of these clubs did get grants and some funding from the Premier League itself. But you look at some of the numbers and you think, why bother? I mean, we've got the Bristol Rovers owner, and he's put in another £3 million this year. Bristol Rovers have lost 27 million quid.
Yeah.
And these numbers, we just become immune to them.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm not going to earn £3 million in my lifetime. And you know, we got a football club that's going to lose it in a year. It's that sort of, you put that into some sort of context. In addition, you know, since I think we got our script from producer Guy, Salford City via Project 92, which is the company run by Gary Neville, David Beckham, the Paul Scholes, and Nicky Butt, and so on. That club is now in the EFL. And as for Project 92, I'm not sure what Project 92 stands for, but this is possible spreadsheet heaven for me. They did manage to lose £92,000 a week, which is, you know, £4.5 million in a year, which is ridiculous. And you know, that club is kept going by a guy called Peter Lim. Peter Lim owns 50% of Project 92, and the class of 92 own the other 50% between them. But it's an expensive business, and you can see why owners are now thinking, if somebody comes in with a fair offer, I'll snap the hand off.
Yeah, I've got a feeling, Kieran, it's probably called Project 92 because of the class of 92 rather than the understated ambition of losing £92,000 a week.
Although, well, that's the shame. Well, if it isn't, they've achieved what a way to run a business.
I just quite like the idea of Nicky Butt being at the meeting going, hang on a second, we're calling it Project 92. Why? Because Nicky, we want to lose £92,000 a week. Does that make, you know, Paul Scholes just saying, shut up, Nicky, just do what you're told. Accrington Stanley also posted a loss, but nowhere near as much as those three clubs.
Yeah, and our good friend Andy Holt, and I think we're allowed to, we are now allowed to confirm that we will be doing the second Price of Football Live at Accrington Stanley on May the 10th. So tickets will soon be available on sale. And we're hoping to have a special guest whose initials are A and H on the show as well. But we don't want to give too much away. We don't want to give too much away, as we know. Andy runs a tight ship. He sets a budget. Accrington have one of the lowest budgets in League One, but they've still managed A, to get there, and B, stay there on a really low budget. And they lost around about 35 grand for the year. And that was, you know, as a result of COVID. And as Andy says, those losses would have been lower, but the EFL fined them £8,000 for pulling out for a match because of COVID. I think this is a classic example of don't live beyond your means, set a budget, stick to it, and also develop a relationship with the fan base so that they understand what you're doing. And, you know, anybody that's been to an away match with Accrington who's seen Andy, he's approachable. He will say it as he sees it. And, you know, I agree with what Andy says nearly all the time. You know, I think he's a shining light.
Yeah, I've been to Accrington before, but I'm really looking forward to it. I've never been to the club. Slightly affronted by producer guy assuming that I know nothing about the geography of the north. And when he confirmed that we were going to Accrington, included some details about where it is and how to get there. It's like, I know I'm a confirmed Londoner, but I know where Accrington is. They're in my book. I've been there before. And also, I spoke to Ali. Ali's on tour at lunchtime, and she apparently saw the need for the first thing for her to say was, they will have heard all the Stanley jokes. It's like, who do these people think I am? I'm not going to actually go up to actors, and the first thing I'm not going to say is Stanley here? For love of God. But for some clubs who made a lot, we will be lovely to see you all, by the way, and we will have details of ticket prices and times very shortly. And then hopefully we'll be in a position to announce further live shows across the rest of the year. A club that made a profit in 2021 was Sheffield United, £9.5 million, which you would expect from a club that had been in the Premier League for two seasons.
Well, yes, but this is the paradox of football. Sheffield United are the only club to have made a profit from day-to-day activities in 2021. Others have made a profit on the back of a couple of player sales. And how were they rewarded? They got relegated. Mm-hmm. And if we go back to the Championship in 2019, only one club made a profit that year. That club was Rotherham United. They were relegated.
Yeah.
The clubs which made the biggest losses were Aston Villa, who got promoted, and Derby County made the second highest losses, and they played Aston Villa in the final of the playoffs at Wembley. So football rewards overspending. Chelsea have made a huge loss in the Premier League, but they won the Champions League, so that makes it okay. So it is this balancing act which never seems to work. Sheffield United's wage bill was around about £50 million lower than other clubs in the bottom six of the Premier League. And that was ultimately reflected in the fact that they ended up going down. Yeah. Now, they would have had substantial bonuses, which would have added to that wage bill had they avoided relegation. That's the way that the system works. But it does show that if clubs try to operate some form of financial common sense model, then the rewards of that are relegation.
To no one's surprise, Kieran, UEFA's reforms to the Champions League include safeguards for elite clubs, allowing them to qualify even if they underperform domestically.
Yes, this is from 2024-25 when the new format of the Champions League arises. Clubs are going to play 10 group games instead of six. And I'm trying to work out how many people, you and I, we both got friends who support Liverpool and Manchester United and City and Chelsea and Arsenal and so on. I'm just wondering how many of them have actually said, what we really want is an additional four group games in the Champions League to enhance our football enjoyment. If we transform ourselves into 2024-25, and let's assume that the four clubs, and I'm going to have to say this through very, very gritted teeth, if the four clubs who are in the semi-finals of the FA Cup, which are, of course, Palace, Chelsea, Manchester City and Liverpool, if they get through to the final, if Manchester City or Liverpool or Chelsea win the FA Cup and they hadn't qualified for the Champions League through finishing in the top four, they would then go into the Champions League based on their five-year coefficient.
Yeah.
If Crystal Palace win the FA Cup, they go into the Europa League.
Yeah.
Now, tell me that is not fair. And I'll be honest, and I can't believe that I'm saying this. I am so furious about this conniving, scheming approach to trying to protect the financial interest of billionaires who already own elite football clubs. I'm going to say this, and I'll probably never say this again. I hope Palace win the FA Cup this season.
Wow. We'll be clipping that out and putting that on social media. No one needs to know the context for that. In the unlikely event, history has shown us, Kieran, in the unlikely event that Palace do win the FA Cup, UEFA will find some way of keeping us out of the Europa League. Don't worry. Just imagine the excitement of the Europa League. Never mind. Anyway, Kieran Maguire says he hopes Crystal Palace win the FA Cup. I will get our media team. Unfortunately, you are our media team. Kieran is the problem there. But I'll find some way of sharing that on social media. Our penultimate story is an interesting one. Michel Platini says he has filed a criminal complaint against Gianni Infantino. We've yet to have a response from Gianni Kettle. what's this about, Kieran?
Well, again, we have to put this into some form of historical context. We know that Michel Platini has been banned, I think, since 2015 from football. This was all due to a payment that was given to him on the say-so of Sepp Blatter, the saviour of modern football. The gentleman that thought that women's football could be improved by them wearing shorter shorts. He epitomizes the English FA as well. The comments that we've had from some of their members. So it's pretty depressing stuff. But the accusation by Platini's legal team is that Gianni Infantino has, and I quote, peddled influence. Now, I've got no idea what peddled influence means, but there's going to be a case against not only Infantino, but also some other members of FIFA. It's going to be potentially held in a Swiss court. And it does seem that it's grown men acting like children, and making lawyers even richer on the back of this. You and I both remember Platini as a player.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
Let's just remember him as absolutely brilliant footballer. But he's lost it. He's completely lost it. Just sometimes he's got to move on, Michel.
Yeah, he's gone full Morrissey on us, hasn't he? Basically. Essentially, yeah, I had some
a bit like Matt Letizia.
I know. Let's just reflect for a moment, Kieran, that you and I will never be in a position where we can peddle influence
I can barely pedal a bicycle.
That's true. Although, to be fair, I do get served quicker in the Porson's Arms because I mention them every time I do anything on the media. So that's about it. Our final story, Ken. I've been pleasantly surprised and encouraged by the resistance English football fans have shown towards the whole cryptocurrency NFT thing. It's not something that's been taken up with as much enthusiasm as I believe English clubs thought they would be. And it seems that it might be the deal abroad as well in Spain, because Lionel Messi has signed a $20 million, I beg your pardon, to promote the crypto fan company Socios.
Yes. I mean, and with regards to your first comments, it looks as if 95% of Liverpool's planned NFT uplift has failed. There's been relatively little demand for people wanting to pay $75 to buy a cartoon picture, which they can only keep online of James Milner.
Yeah.
And co. I don't understand why people don't want to spend $70. Yeah, but perhaps they think it's a waste of money. This company, Socios, who it hasn't necessarily covered itself with glory. There's some very good investigative journalism taking place into how the market is organized for some of the products. And as I've said every time, if people want to use cryptocurrencies as a means of transferring money from one bank account to another, and not get stiffed by their local bank who you know charges them God knows what, then fine, absolutely no. But it's not an investment, and it's exactly the same with NFTs. If you want to collect a digital version of Panini cards, go ahead, fill your boots, have fun. But I've got my Panini collections going back a few years. I did it because it was. That's what it was. It was fun. I never did it with the viewpoint to thinking of it as any form of investment. And it was never marketed to me as an investment, along with all of the other middle-aged men who really ought to know better and are very, very fortunate to have incredibly patient wives who tolerate such behavior. And this is my concern. You know, why are Socios paying Lionel Messi $20 million? It's because he is celebrity. He gives their products, which are unregulated, highly volatile, and open to manipulation. He is giving their products legitimacy, and that is what they are seeking at present. And you know, if he wants to sign that contract, I'm not going to criticize him. Ultimately, you know, it's his call. You know, we've made certain decisions on this show as to what we are prepared to advertise and what we're not prepared to advertise, and. Yeah, that's our call as well. Yeah, each to their own.
Yeah, somehow Manscaped got through that discussion, but we've managed to retain our integrity by doing regular adverts for shaving your pubic hair. That takes some doing, doesn't it? There's a documentary I watched last night on BT Sport 3 about the boot room at Liverpool, which is very much not a nostalgia fest. Very interesting about the place of the club in Liverpool history and the relative economic mights of Liverpool and Everton. But I was just thinking last night, if you told Bob Paisley, you know, if you said, sit down, Bob, take your gabardine Mac off, rest the Brill Cream on your hair. If you told Bob Paisley that at some stage in the future, his club would be offering for a price of £75, a cartoon of a Liverpool player that you can't take off your computer screen, which again, you'd have to explain that to him, for a start off, it just is an indication. I'm genuinely pleased that football fans in the UK have shown such resistance, because it just does indicate that we're not going to buy everything that the club offers. It's like, yeah, we'll buy scarves, we'll buy shirts, we'll buy things that we choose to buy, but we're not just going to spend money on something we can't even hold or put on our toilet wall. It's just, well done, UK football fans. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to our always free-to-air pod, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show on our Monday pod, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. If you'd like to send me a text or tweet congratulating me on not once mentioning the fact that we beat Arsenal 3-0, only three goals in the same game, Kieran. Imagine that.
That does not compute.
Graham Potter, the saviour of English football, can only dream of scoring three goals in one game. We will have more details, as I say, of our next live show, but it will be at Accrington Stanley's ground on the 10th of May. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran McGuire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, folks, thanks for your comments. Thanks for your feedback. They make us laugh and sometimes cry at times. So we take on the full range. I can assure you. If you want to go down to use the Patreon route, for as little as £1 a month, you can support the show. But if you want to support it in another way, you want to give us some good karma and also help us in the charts via the algorithms which are used by the likes of Google and Spotify and Apple. But the one way you can do that is to go onto your app and to give us a review. And if you give us 5 stars, if you think we're worth it, of course, that's down to you. That's fantastic. It doesn't matter what you say. You could say you would rather the show was presented by Hartley Hare and J.R. Hartley, and it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference. And if you don't know who Hartley Hare is or J.R. Hartley, you're probably not part of Kevin and mine's peer group.
Hartley Hare, he was an annoying little sod, wasn't he?
He was one of the worst puppets of all time.
Oh, terrible know-it-all. Oh, dear, J.R. Hartley. Yeah, well, it's this. You know what, Kieran? This was probably the show that BAFTA stayed with right to the end. we were doing so well, apart from going on about shaving our pubes for no apparent reason. And then there's just bizarre mention of Hartley Hare. And who were the other people in that? I'm going to have to look. That was Hartley.
The BAFTA has definitely gone,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. As I drifted off then, I'm just planning to Google Hartley Hare. bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Buy some football.